you were asking questions, Hap, but I didn't hear if you're going to have a big heartburn.
Yeah.
You got a big heartburn? You two are.
What is? I'm sorry.
I mean, are you saying that I'm going to have to, if I want to add another line to my farm, I'm going to have to get a permit?
No.
What did you say?
Not a permitting.
I think the envision is that if you wanted to add more, if this was in effect and we had a regulation that said new cages require a public notification, that we would do some type of public notification, you get ready to do this, notify the neighborhood, and they would get the chance to comment or protest and say, no, they don't think it's a good idea, and they'd have to give us why. And if we couldn't resolve that between you and the protestants, like we always do with current lease applications, it would go to the commission. And the commission make the final decision. Yes, Hap, you get all the cages you wanted. No, you get none of them. You get half of them. Yeah, I mean, I don't, you know, those are the possibilities. But there would be a process where you, an additional step more than what you could go out there today and put another row of cages, and no one's going to say anything other than they might say something, but they can't really do anything.
I kind of have problems with that scenario.
Oh, yeah.
Because that's limiting his business expansion capabilities significantly. Because now, here's Hap, he's been growing oysters on this ground for 4 or 5 years, and he says, I'm ready to expand, and he says, I'm going to put in X number of cages, and it comes up, and the upland property owners go, hell no, we won't go. And they're preventing him from expanding his business legally.
No,
that's not
No. What all you're doing is giving them the opportunity to say they don't like it.
Well, but it's going to come to you guys,
right?
And there is the possibility that the commission could say, "Yeah, we agree with them." Mm-hmm. So once again, you're taking away his legitimate right to expand his business on a ground that he is legally leased from the state.
Excuse me, but you want to take away the legitimate right of homeowners and voters who have property in Virginia Beach, and you want to give, and you want to, they're legitimate, and you want to take away their right to protest or have a say in where the cages go. So they're legitimate also. They're not represented regularly on the VMRC.
Thank you, Richard. Yes. I agree with Richard, 100%.
I don't have a big comment for that other than.
Again, we're back.
If only brand new ones, then we're back to a use plan at the beginning of an application would take care of that.
Yeah. Yes.
What are you going to do? Yeah. But we have existing leases in the land that have cages on them, and they want to expand. Should they be grandfathered? If so, then most of the legitimate guys down there that have leases are already grandfathered.
Yeah.
And could expand. I don't know how to solve any of your problems, but
what I'm seeing is that we have a modern technology that has changed the way they grow oysters. But we have sort of an obsolete set of laws that govern the way this is all put together.
We agree with that 100%.
Yeah. Okay. And the point I'm trying to make is that oystermen, like you guys, are businessmen. You're developers. You're developing underwater land. And what you're doing is you want to continue to develop. If it's economically profitable, you want more of it.
Right.
You know? But then that's the nutshell right here. That's the problem. That there's a lot of homeowners and a lot of users in the Lynn Haven that see no end to that. If you start making more and more and more money, you're going to be putting in more and more and more cages. And so Richard got a little fired up, but I agree with him that there is all other users that need to be
considered.
And you can't just keep on adding more cages, because then the homeowners are all going to say, wait a minute, I mean, you know, where is the end of it? I'm in all deference to you all talking about muddy bottoms and all this kind of stuff, modern technology 25 years ago didn't even have cages. 25 years from now, they'll probably figure out some way to work on a muddy bottom. If it's economically feasible, they'll figure it out.
It'd be the best thing for the bay, if they could.
So the whole process here is trying to create some sort of a checks and balance on the cages. And what we're after is the word balance. And it's not a balance if you just give a man the ability to just more and more and more and more. Then the homeowner, we got this guy that's sitting down on that point, Dardine. You probably talk to him on a regular basis. I mean, he's got 200 in his backyard. What are you going to do? Put 200 more, and then 200 more, and then 200 more? Where does it stop? So that's why I like the process of at least that man has the ability to come before some organization or some group in protest. Right now, he's got no voice. The VMRC has given away, or leased, the entire shoreline of the Lynn Haven. I mean, do you realize that the entire shoreline is now supposed to have cages on it? Whatever happened to the swimmers and the dogs and the fishermen and the boat riders and everybody else who uses it? But the entire shoreline has been given away. And so people who live there are saying, wait a minute, this used to be the good old Lynn Haven, beautiful. Now it's turning into a commercial zone. So, yeah, you got me a little spooked, too, when I see, I don't think that this committee wants to walk away with grandfathering and then providing unlimited growth to cages or whatever other structure comes up. There may be a whole new structure 10 years from now. There needs to be some sort of a limitation where the people who live here and are expecting MRC to use this public trust can provide for the rest of the users. This is, we've made this whole thing about the oystermen and the oyster growers, and we're just leaving out the residents and the recreational people. You got, this is the biggest recreational area in the city. I mean, this is like a zoning issue. You're putting commercial right in the middle of a recreational facility. If you tried to build a business, a commercial business, right in the middle of a city park, the city would tell you no, you can't do it. But wait a minute, we're allowing this single interest group of oystermen to take over the Lynn Haven, and they've now got the whole shoreline.
John, the oystermen were here first, the ecology, it's all been there first, y'all, with the houses and the pollution that have caught into.
So what does that mean to me? What does that mean to the homeowner that you got here first?
I don't think you're that old, Hap.
Huh?
I don't think you're that old.
That doesn't mean anything. Yeah. We're living in today and in tomorrow.
I take that back.
Hold on, Millie. Hold on a second. You got me warmed up. If we allowed this thing to just blossom, it's going to turn the whole Lynn Haven into a commercial zone. And I don't think that's what any of us want to see happen to our Lynn Haven.
Okay, but the facts are that 80% isn't suitable for oysters. 20% is, and it's shrinking.
That's today's. They can get new technology, or something can clean up, or the regulations can change.
It's getting worse, not getting better, because of the runoff from the property owners and such. It's not getting better. So, and there isn't, besides the economic benefit, I mean, the environmental benefit of oysters, I mean, it's, the city's going to have to spend hundreds and hundreds of millions of dollars to meet these new clean water regulations that are coming down, and oysters are a big part of it. And they're going to start promoting it. There's been talk about paying us to take that nitrogen out.
The city is very concerned about the fact that they don't have any say in this permitting process. I mean, anything else in this city, you would never see commercial zoning up against residential zoning. Yeah. It just doesn't happen. And that's what's happening here.
I started this a little bit. I don't have a problem with HAP expanding. I don't have a problem with any of the watermen expanding. I have a problem of not giving the homeowners and the boaters any voice in the process. So just leaving them out. and saying they were here first, they can do whatever the hell they want. I got a problem with that.
I
want the homeowners to have a voice. I want the light of day on it. If the homeowners can't rally the VMRC to limit what they want or you know, and Hap can, God bless Hap. I'm happy for him.
I agree. I'm 100%.
I think everybody agrees with that.
We want a process. We don't want blank check.
All right, back to the whole reason we're here.
Ken, my problem with this is I look at it in behalf of the watermen. What I don't think the watermen want is they don't want the electorate of Virginia Beach up in arms against the oystermen. There's a lot more of them. They vote. I've had calls by four members of the General Assembly asking me what's going on in your meetings and how's it going. Because according to one, he said we're being hammered by homeowners who are voters. And there's a hell of a lot more voters that are homeowners than there are watermen. And I'm worried about the watermen's interests because I do agree that we need the oystermen. We need to do it profitably for them, but the regulations need to come.
I was getting ready to say something bad about John Bull, and he's here.
Oh, there he is.
He's here for an hour.
All right. Again, back to the whole reason this thing has been formed and the reason that our super nice commissioner got me to chair this thing is basically what these gentlemen just said. You know, and again, my statement at the very beginning, oysters are good. Agriculture is good. It's good for the environment. It's good for the economy. But obviously cages are a... Some have said a perceived, I think it was Chris that said that, a perceived problem, but that perception is important. And I don't think that we're going to be able to have this whole process be considered successful unless we come up with some manner of having the landowners, homeowners, the recreational, having an ability to have an input into the placement of cages. Obviously, it's cages are the thing. So whether we do it by regulation, notification of new cages being placed in there, do it with the site plan, use plan, whatnot. There's going to have to be some coming together of a process that allows homeowner input that industry can live with. And there are going to be times when homeowners are going to protest that VMRC will agree with them, and that's just going to happen. And there will be times when VMRC doesn't agree with them and allows the placement of cages in places that other users don't want. But unless we come up with some mechanism that allow these people to have a voice prior to the cages being placed there, Richmond is going to go back to Richmond, and this is going to be we're going to have stuff that was happening in Richmond like we did.
Go ahead, Mike. No, you go first. Go ahead, and then I'll go.
I want to agree 100% that we want this process in Newport News. We have a system on the books in place for the commission to handle these. Right now, what we're discussing is what additional safeguards are going to be developed to allow the homeowners to have input. But I agree 100%, we want it in Newport News. We don't want to go to Richmond, because when it gets to Richmond, the unintended consequences blossom.
And I agree with Mike, and I agree with you, Ken, and I feel like we have a system, not a good one for notification, in place now. We're talking, I think, the fear of the future. Jim, can you give us some idea of the possibility, existing leases, what we might expect if we were to say, yes, we would like notification if new cages were added? where that might be, or what that might be, or for instance, I don't know if you guys would object to HAP adding another line, because HAP's over there, away from navigation, away from the backyard of somebody. But do we truly have a potential for blossoming behind homeowners?
We went through this last time. And, you know, the reality is that the bottom is limited both by the condition of it, and there is the possibility sometime that there'll be another method for soft bottom. But likely if there was a method for soft bottom, it would not be in this 12-inch zone. You would go then into the normal permitting process. But, you know, in just what we see in aquaculture is, I mean, Lynn Haven is a place with a cottage industry. It's not a place that lends itself to a factory system. It has unique oyster that demands a high enough price that you can have small operations. And small operations will rule the day there. And we're using 10 acres now. So if we five times it, which I don't think is anywhere possible, you would talk about 50 acres. I don't think we'll ever do 50 acres of intensive culture in the Lynn Haven. I mean, when I talk to the hatchery managers, they're not surely not hearing from people down here that saying, you know, I have these great plans to get more oysters for this area. So, you know, you can't have a crystal ball that's that good. But, you know, we're not likely to see a fivefold increase anywhere else, and so it's not going to be any different in Lynn Haven. Lynn Haven lends itself to these small operations. You know, we, like Benny said, we have the opportunity and we have the ability in that cage regulation to make something that will give people comfort, I think. And I don't think you can be looking and trying to guess what the future is going to be. I just don't think that's where your safeguards come with a little modification to the regulation. That, you know, you have a commission that'll be sitting in place year in, year out, that will see the changes that are going on. And if the flip side, they'll see the changes in if there's more boating activity. I mean, mm-hmm. It's a process that has served us well through regulations for years and years. Yep. And it is a little bit out of whack right now, but it's not so far out of whack that a very small modification to this cage regulation wouldn't make it tractable again. So.
Excuse me, I just have one question. You referred to the term, you said we're using 10 acres now. What are you referring to?
There are 10 acres in the Lynn Haven right now that have cages on them.
Oh, I see. Okay, 10 acres that have cages.
There's 2,500 acres out there leased. So if you had five times the people, you'd only have 50 acres.
See, to me, that's total bogus information.
Yeah, that's irrelevant.
I mean, that's irrelevant. And I wish you quit saying that, because we're talking shoreline here. Sure, it's that you're counting an acre that's out in the middle that's 30 feet deep.
Absolutely.
You're not counting that. Those
20, but even so.
So you're making these numbers seem so minuscule when in reality is the homeowners are talking about the shoreline. It's the shoreline. So tell me about the square footage of the shoreline that has been used by cages right now.
It's less than 10. It's
don't go there because it ain't true. There those cages are like in Baycliff. They lined the whole thing.
But if you figure out, I mean, what you're talking about either linear feet or you're talking about acres. Acres are acres. Square feet.
Well, but you see, you're trying to make the point that it's a minuscule problem because you'd bring in all of the acreage. And I'm saying it's the shoreline is where everybody's having the heartburn. It's up against people's homes and up and right behind their houses. It's the beaches.
It is the beaches, and that is true. But the fact is, when in the conversations you're talking about effects on navigation and people running around, and so then you are talking about the entire area. And that's why a notification process and these small changes in how you would cite cages should be able to take care of something like that. Mm-hmm. Because they would be with a buffer, if you're 150 feet, whatever you hit, you're taking care of those people in those areas having input in the system.
I'm back to my point of it. Maybe you and I need to have a private discussion, but I think it's misleading when you give those facts and figures.
Well, let me jump in here because I'm going to defend Jim. I'm the surveyor. Jim's pretty expert about acreages, but I'm more of an expert about acreages. You know, I personally went out and located all of these. There is about 10 acres, an actual encroachment of cages in the entire Lynnhagen system. And of those, half has some that you might consider in someone's backyard, not against their property, but very near their property. One of the biggest percentage of areas of where there are actually cages are in front of Seashore State Park, which is not anyone's backyard. It's everyone's backyard. It's a park. And we can have a discussion about whether that's a good place to have them or not because it's a park. But my estimation, if you want to talk about beach area or near shore, it's a quarter of that 10 acres where there are actually cages near someone's residence. There are cages out in the main stem of the Lynnhagen where the island places are. There are no houses anywhere near that. They're just marsh islands. I understand your point, but the numbers are what the numbers are. We know where the cages are down there, and we know where they're located. And yes, there are some areas along the shoreline that are leased that could have cages in the future. And it is a little misnomer to say there's 2,500 acres and there's only 10 acres of cages. But there is a lot of ground out in Broad Bay that's deep that it is leased. It'll never have cages on it, and even if it does, you'll never know it. They're so deep, you'll go over them with a boat, other than maybe seeing some stakes marking the boundary around them. So it is a cottage industry, and it can never get but so big. And I know there's no solace to the fact that there are already cages there, and some of them are onerous to you where they're located. But that's where we are. And the agency is in favor of more light on this. You know, we're trying to work with y'all to come up with a solution to notify you if people want to put new cages out. We're not opposed to that. I don't think industry is necessarily opposed to that idea either. That's where we are. And we can have a separate discussion too if you want. But
I guess that brings us back to the point. Just a little bit of a contradiction to what y'all said. There really isn't a process in place. That's why we're here. There is not a notification process for new cage placement on existing leases. And so the only notification process we have now is on a new lease if that person says they're going to put cages. Maybe there's no requirement for them to say that at this point. And so that's, I really think why we're here is because there is no notification process for the placement of cages, and the homeowners don't like that. And so
I just want to reiterate that I am concerned about the people that have their cages out there and their expansion plans.
I guess my concern is if we don't come up with something, then this is going to end up in Richmond, and it's going to be ugly, is what my concern is.
If people have cages out there, they can make the application to put more cages, and it comes before the VMRC. The only difference is the public knows about it now. But
that's it.
If I was a VMRC commissioner, I'd let half have more cages. I'd say put it further away from the guy's house instead of closer, but put all the damn cages out there you want. If you wanted to make money.
Thank you, Richard.
So, Mr. Ben, you ready to do some more work?
Sure. Move on to another topic.
Oh, shoot. The commissioner left.
Yeah.
You've heard the issue.
and it's a notification of cages. You've said that 335 can be modified to accommodate that. You want to try to take a stab at modifying 335? Maybe you and Jim?
Sure. Yeah, if, pretty
is,
much.
Is that
think,
what?
Even though y'all kind of backtracked and
yeah,
yeah. You know, I'm getting a feeling the recommendation is you would like to see that regulation modified to create a site plan type notification process
for the Lynn Haven.
For the Lynn Haven. And
let me say something to Mike.
We can do that.
Mike, the problem here is that the homeowners, the residential people, feel like their land, their beach, and their waterway and their has been taken. And we're trying to get away from the taken thing. And these people will calm down if there is a process in place where somebody's looking at it and not just
ask them to do that.
So what you're asking for is exactly what everybody's wanting to do.
Just ask them to do that.
Okay, but I wanted to let you know that the motivation behind the homeowners and the residents, and sort of like all other users, and the Lynn Haven plan that, you know, are you talking about drawing something up and letting us see it, and then we'll mm-hmm. talk about it next next meeting?
Sure.
Yeah. That's what I just asked.
What you want.
Yep.
Yeah.
Tell us what we want.
You want us to come up with some regulatory language to modify that existing regulation. For some notification type procedure that would go into that regulation that y'all can look at and comment on, which would be a model to eventually modify that regulation.
People just want a voice.
I understand
all.
Your frustration.
That's all.
And that's exactly
people
what
want a
I
voice.
Just asked.
Modify
them to
regulations
do.
Every commission meeting,
yeah.
Virtually. Mm-hmm. Some regulation is being modified. Trust me, he knows.
Okay, I have one more. It's all related to the use. To what the homeowners, what the boaters object to, particularly the homeowners. And we haven't brought this up, and I don't know what the answer is. I'm hoping as a group we can come upon some compromise, which we don't really have now. I believe the homeowners, one of these objections and wanting to protest and all that, they don't want to see, and we all have pictures of these cages, you know, above the ground and, you know, just piles and piles of them in different places at different times. I think we need to address that, too. If it's possible, if we should do something about having some guidelines for not having the cages be visible at low tide.
Okay.
I'm bringing that back because this is what the homeowners, and I know we're all thinking, oh, my God, it's a very difficult topic, but that is what we're talking about. That is what the homeowners object to.
So let me say two things about that. First of all, we got complaints in the last 2 weeks and pictures of cages in the Lynn Haven and some other places.
I'm just talking Lynn
Haven. That were stacked. That is not allowed under the regulations. You can't take 2 12-inch stages and stack them on top of each other.
Yeah.
It is a practice that some of the watermen use to self-dry the cages to get the fouling off of them. As of this week, we had law enforcement in the Lynn Haven checking on that, and they did find that to be the case, and hopefully it's not the case anymore. A couple of leases that where it was occurring have been told it's not acceptable practice. So, and that's not allowed under regulation. The regulation is 12 inches off the bottom, no matter how much water is there. I'll get to that in a minute.
Okay.
But you can't stack them on top of each other. You need a different permit for that. Mm-hmm. And you can't stack them on top of either just to dry them, you know, regardless of whether you're growing, you know, oysters in them. And that it's happened some other places in the state, and we're proactively working on that. Water depth is a little trickier issue because, as you know, in the Lynn Haven, the day we went out on the boat trip, there was some guys working, and some of the cages were up out of the water, but it was, you know, but it was lower than normal tide. So trying to regulate that a cage is always in the water when you have such variable tides in Virginia, you know, I don't think we want to write a guy a ticket because his cages are out of the water, but it's tides a foot lower than normal. So, and I understand the visual aspect. People don't like to see them, but, and I don't have a good answer for you about that. But that we hear this issue routinely about cages, you know, being exposed normally at every low tide cycle, part of the cage is sticking out of the water.
And sometimes a lot of it. And that's the main objection, I think, to the homeowners. They're very happy to have oysters and have oystermen do the work and do that part of it. It's not that they're against oysters and oystermen. It's just that, quite honestly, having these things, you know, a whole row of them somewhere here and there, be so visible is not the best thing for Virginia's, you know, largest tourism city.
Well, you know, happily won't address that, or Mr. Ludford, but, one man's treasure is another man's junk, I guess, but this is the way they're growing. They're growing them in cages and in real shallow water. Sometimes they are exposed. It is to some degree self-regulating, less so in the Lynn Haven. Most people don't want their cages exposed in the wintertime routinely at every low tide because the oysters will freeze. Now, it's a little more temperate in the Lynn Haven where you don't have quite as cold a weather, but I don't have a magic solution for that issue that you have.
Well, I had to bring
that
up.
You're welcome to make a recommendation.
I had to bring it up.
Trying to regulate that is going to be very difficult.
Because that's what the homeowners...
6 inches of water? Is it 12 inches? What is the minimum?
I had to bring it up because that's what homeowners kept... That's what I keep hearing when I talk to people. They say, well, have you brought that up? What about these things at low tide? And I'm sure there's some answer. There must be some solution to this. Something. Put them out in a little deeper water.
You don't want to do that because that impedes navigation. You don't want them in deeper water. You want boating in deeper water.
Yeah, the conundrum is when you move from the 12 to 18 inches of water to more than 3 or 4 feet of water, or even 3 feet of water, and start putting cages in those areas at low tide, they really start to create more of a hazard than they do in the really shallow area where a lot of boating is happening in the 3 foot area, mm-hmm. and very little is happening in the foot and a half area. You just trade one problem in one place for a different problem. But we've had people question that, and couldn't there be a minimum water depth that they have to be in? But again, when you have tidal fluctuations like we have in Virginia, it's pretty hard to put into a regulation.
Been a lot of talk about boater safety and oysters, and last night or yesterday afternoon when my crew was going back and they got within about 15 feet of the no wake zone at going down Long Creek, a bayliner about 21 feet inboard outboard came flying by, went within about 4 or 5 feet of them, and almost capsized them. We lost all of our bushel baskets and $1,000 generator, and we got the bushel baskets back, but we've got to buy another generator, and just took on down, and we found where we think the boat is and calling the police and get that thing taken out. But, you know, I guess it's one for the boaters and zero for the water.
Did you get the names of it? Hmm? Did they get the name of the boat?
And that's a classic example of the problem with the zoning and the mixed use.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know, and that guy with that bayliner probably was from out of state or something.
He was at Marina Shores is where the boat held.
There's plenty of idiots in state.
And they're not all watermen.
No.
They're all on outer state.
I was giving y'all a bit of...
A lot of people don't know how to navigate a boat.
And Ben, it sounds like, you want to modify 335 with some, and that's a regulation. Can you give me, what... It seems like you're moving that towards 290, which is a full permit. What is the difference between modifying 290 versus using the permit process? Is there something significantly harder about doing the permit than this? What is the nuances there?
I think we're talking about just the Lynn Haven. We're not talking
about
the regulation for the entire state.
Well, I know, but that's... You have two regular...
A limited number of people who are doing cages in the Lynn Haven, so it's really going to, it's only going to apply to a very small percent of leases even within the Lynn Haven.
Okay.
Most people aren't going to put cages out in the real deep water, so I don't really have a comment on whether it's more difficult. Yes, it is moving more towards other permits we have, whether it's the more than 12-inch... But it's not that robust. I mean, that requires a much more robust public interest review than what I think we're talking about. We're just agreeing to try to modify the regulation to address the issues y'all have raised. And it would be specific to the Lynn Haven. And, could it expand beyond that? Who knows?
Agreed. So we're going to see what Ben has for us by modification of the regulation to allow some type of notification for new cages at next visit. John, did you have that presentation?
I don't think we have time.
Are you going to do that next time?
Yeah.
All right, so we'll do that next time. Any, I know we still have other issues, but is there anything we really want to start tonight?
You want to talk about liability real quick? That shouldn't take.
Yeah, you go over the. Yeah, you can go over the liability, yeah. And I was going to take public, you know, public comment. But, so we'll do that. That's July 1.
George, when you got?
This one just has two paragraphs on it. We, as requested in some emails and from the committee, the work group, there's, you know, you raise the issue of liability and what's that all about and what does it mean and who's liable and related to cages and boating. We did seek some advice from the Attorney General's office. We did not request an official Attorney General opinion, but we do have a representative from the Attorney General's office that basically represents BMRC at our commission hearings, and he's assigned really to our agency as our legal counsel. He did provide us back comments. I can't really give you his official, unofficial comments because they're attorney-client privileged, but what I attempted to do here was just pull out two paragraphs that are somewhat paraphrased, but pretty much what he said about the liability issue. And it does answer some questions, and it may not answer some. That you still have, but the first one is basically, you know, is the state exposed to liability related to permitting cages or allowing cages on leases through a regulation? And the answer is really no. There's a number of reasons that he explained in a lot more legal cases, which I thought would bore you probably, but the only mechanism to really sue the Commonwealth or the agency is there is a tort process where you can attempt to claim damages, but that's also quite limited, and it really, the way I read his, what he wrote us, is that's limited to some really gross negligence by the state. We don't believe that's the case here. You know, you may argue that us allowing this is gross negligence, but we don't think so. We did this pursuant to legislative direction to make things easier for aquaculture to prosper. So. So the second paragraph is a little more detailed. You know, he just says, in sum, he doesn't think either the agency or the Commonwealth can be held liable for placement of fishing gear or oyster cages within the Commonwealth's waters. And he goes on to say, depending on the placement of the gear, the fishermen or aquaculture operators who place the gear or cages in the water may face liability for damages to boats and other watercraft in certain circumstances. However, if the fisherman or the operator of aquaculture mark their gear or structures well and refrain from illegally placing them in navigation channels, such liability is less likely. And this mirrors some previous information we've been given by previous Attorney General representatives to our agency that certainly there's always the potential for someone to sue someone over an accident, a boating accident. And that's a civil matter. But we've routinely been told that pursuant to, if the person has correctly placed his cages and marked them in accordance with our rules, our law, and our regulations, that liability is greatly limited by that fact. And who knows what each individual court case could be. The reverse of that is, for the boater, there could be some liability on the boater's part if he ventures into an area that's clearly marked, clearly done in accordance with Virginia law and regulations, and damages someone's fishing gear, that there may be a reverse liability in the other direction. So that's the advice we've been given. I don't know that that necessarily answers every one of your questions, but that's what we were, you know, we tried to get something back to you based on your request for that. And I can try to answer any questions. The commissioner might be able to. He saw the opinion as well.
I'm sure there are other people that had brought that up with questions, but Mead was the one that really has sent me multiple emails about that, and so he will be at the next meeting, so he may revisit that.
And we can revisit it and have a further discussion if we need to.
All right.
after that came up, I asked my daughter if we had liability insurance. I was sure that we did, and she said, yes, we do. And I would assume most business people do have some sort of liability insurance to protect themselves. But I didn't know. I thought that was what Meade was driving at, but I'm not sure.
All right, I guess my intention at this point is to take any public comment. And then the next meeting will be over there, the Brock building, back at Friday, July 1 in the morning. And I keep looking at you back there because I know John Kay has got a presentation. Is it on PowerPoint?
They have PowerPoint there.
Okay, so that'll be ready for him over there. Okay, and we'll probably go ahead and just start with that.
Okay,
and then go into Ben's and Dr. Wesson's proposed regulation on the cage notification.
Okay.
Yes.
What is your PowerPoint on?
Well, it would. There's a lot of people who were not on the boat trip.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so you know, I do have some example pictures from that.
The notebook you had on the boat trip.
Yeah.
Gotcha. Okay.
And I have that, okay. And then I also have some examples of. I was just out Memorial Day weekend, so you get a vision of what kind of traffic you have on the water, too.
Okay.
So I had those pictures. And then I've kind of gone through the list that we had and tried to look at, you know, different pieces of that, too.
Good. Thank you.
Okay. Any other comments before I go? Yes.
I will be unable to make the 1st of July meeting. At the last meeting, you suggested that substitutes could be appointed provided they were knowledgeable of the situation and had participated in the discussions.
Yeah,
is that still
kind of, and I said I would bow to the committee, so basically you are asking to have someone from your.
I am indeed.
Do we know this person?
You do indeed.
Okay.
It's a gentleman's Chris Ludford.
Okay.
Who I think everyone would agree is well familiar with the situation and has been present for each of the meetings and discussions.
All right. Personally, I have zero problem with Chris. I've worked with him. Do you mind, Chris, discussing things with us next?
Nope.
I was supposed to say next month. It is next month. The very beginning of the month. All right. And you were not going to be here and...
I'm not going to be here, no.
Okay, and did you have someone you wanted to?
I had made the request that could I send a homeowner, somebody who has skin in the game, who has cages in his backyard. You know, would you have a heart attack if I put Bob Dardeen sitting up here?
No, not there.
All right. Are they, because there are homeowners who, I mean, my phone is ringing off the wall with people. Like, what are you going to do about the stuff in my backyard?
Well,
now these people have not been coming to the meetings, but they've definitely got skin in the game.
Well, I would only suggest and encourage that maybe they listen to last meeting's audio and this week's audio.
Sure. Now, what about the ability for that person to vote?
I don't think we're really voting on anything yet.
I just have a question.
We voted last time.
And it's nothing personal, but is it appropriate to have someone on the work group who has applications before before the VMRC? That's my question. Is that an appropriate?
We got people on there that have leases right now.
Well, they're representing the leases. That's fine.
I want homeowner participation and I want industry participation.
Okay.
And so.
I don't mind Darden. Coming up there, although he does harass my people. And, he gets out there with cameras. I've got a young married couple that go out there, and they're in their 20s, and she thinks it's kind of creepy, this guy walking down, taking videos, and you know, every time they go out there. But
hopefully they'll be polite.
And the homeowners think it's creepy having you in their backyard looking into their house. So that's the privacy.
They don't look in their house because they're busy working.
Then you are up here for...
Well, just a housekeeping matter for the meeting next time. So we do have the Brock Center. The meeting will be at 9:30. They are closing the center at noon.
because of the holiday weekend. So I was asked by them to, and I'm going to stay, you know, and help them break down chairs and all that, but that we do plan to finish, you know, and get most of the people out. So I'm thinking 11:30-ish, you know, if we could get done by that time frame, that would be helpful for both me and the staff at the Brock Center. One of the women's going to stay, and she's letting a lot of her people go that morning. So just as a caveat that maybe we might have to cut off discussion at some point that morning and let everybody go. So, and have a nice 4th of July weekend.
All right. Public, now I will listen. We'll take some public comment if anyone has anything they wish to say to us this evening. Maybe you just stood up.
I'm Phil Roars. I'm with the City of Virginia Beach Department of Public Works. These homeowners better represent their position, but I'm certainly happy that you're finding a way to incorporate their concerns. Maybe that's a solution. But I wanted to ask or remind that there are more than that conflict, the direct impact to the property owners. Lost in this discussion, but maybe on your list of to-dos.
Probably is.
Is this issue that Ben started with the renewal process and the transferring process and how antiquated and old that system of law is and regulation. We have concerns, the City of Virginia Beach, specifically Department of Public Works, that there are large leases that are being held that are not productive, and no attempt is being made to make them productive. Yet by virtue of owning that chattel interest, that interest in that lease, those leaseholders can have veto power over public projects, navigation projects, to dredge, to remove some of those sediments that are problematic and to restore boating. So I would hope that we solve the homeowner problem, the notification process, giving them a vote. But I would hope also that you would look at the total regulation and realize there's another conflict besides just the homeowners, that some of these fallow, old leases that have just been maintained for decades by transference are, in effect, blocking navigation projects. So I ask you, please not disregard that. Not address that.
Thank you for coming all the way out here. We're coming to you next
two weeks.
I'm Richard Welton. I hope we're going to address it again, but one of the things I proposed was when we renew the leases that we put a paragraph in there that says they're going to have to grant easements to government navigation projects. They'll have to be compensated based on what they're paying, no more, no profit, but I don't know that we can change the law now without going to the General Assembly, but you can change it when they renew it. So as they come up, we hopefully 10 years from now, that'll be automatic.
I appreciate that, and I'm not a legal expert. I'm an engineer, and I know there's a difference between laws and regulations, but I've read the law, and I'm concerned that if the law isn't changed, you can't regulate out the fact that you can transfer a lease in the 9th year, 11th month, without any public notice and maintain it for another 10 years, whether it's being productive or not. And I'm not sure you can regulate out those legislative loopholes that will allow the things that Ben described as being reasons to be granted an extension or a renewal, even though you haven't harvested or even attempted to propagate. So I appreciate where you're coming from. Any help will help. But I'm afraid that you can't get away from doing something that to get it.
That's a shame.
I hope the fear of not the concern, right as it is, to not get I hope that doesn't sway the committee to the point where you don't address it. What I feel is a very important issue.
I keep looking over these guys and waiting for applause, but thank you for your comment. Okay. VMRC has been dealing with this for a good long time.
Yes.
And y'all maintained your straight faces. I'm proud of you. Any other public comments? She beat you to it.
I guess it's ladies first. My name is Beverly Lutford, and I have a small, oyster farm on the Lynn Haven. You all have met me, most of you, before. I just wanted to provide some information that I think might be helpful for people who may not know on several issues that were discussed tonight. First of all, about cages and addition of cages and numbers of cages. I just want to say that there are several things that affect that. One is that we use a cage to put the bags in when we get the baby oysters. They're very tiny. And that particular cage holds bags, and we use that for a short period of time until the oysters get large enough that they can be moved into a larger mesh container. And so those cages are put in and taken out as they're needed. They're not in there all the time. And so that's not, it made it seem, I think, to some committee members and maybe to some public that you put the cages in and the same cages stay there all the time, the same number and the same type, and that's not the case. So I just wanted to let you know that there's constantly movement. And also I mentioned at the last committee meeting that we do cage rotation, and a committee member said, what is that? And I tried to explain that the cages get fouled. It's not good for the oysters. It's not good for the river. It's not good for anything. So we rotate the cages out so that they can dry, as you heard earlier. And so there are times when there are fewer cages because we've harvested and we're drying the cages and cleaning the cages. We don't pressure wash them or anything and get any of that back into the river. That would not be our intent. But we actually relocate them so that we can. And this movement, I think, is true. I may not be speaking for everybody, but all aquaculture people do that, movement of cages, for these reasons that I've just said. So if we have 40 cages today, we may have 50 cages next month, and we may have 30 cages in 3 months. You know, it's not a static number. The second thing, and also cages occasionally do get damaged, and we have to take them out and replace them. So to share that, I wanted to mention that just in case you, I know this is maybe an insult, and I don't mean it that way, but success in the oyster growing industry is not just up to the oyster farmer. God has something to do with it too, acts of God. And so sometimes when you have a lease, you may not be successful because there are issues that come up, whether it be, an example, all your oysters do get frozen, or you lose them because somebody came by with a boat and hit the cage and all the babies, thousands, hundreds of thousands of them, were released into the river for the predators to eat. There are lots of reasons why somebody might not be successful, and it's a tremendously labor-intensive, hands-on farming that many people think they want to do, and then when they start doing it, they find out that, oh my goodness, I'm going to have to be out here at 5 o'clock in the morning because of the tide, and I can't work on weekends because I don't want to be in the way of recreation, and I'm going to have to do this when it's 17 degrees, and I don't think I really want to grow oysters, you know. And so for those people, I think it one of the reasons why Dr. Wesson, who most of the oyster growers that I know respect very much, respect Dr. Wesson, because he tells you this is not fun. You know, if it was, we'd be buying tickets. They'd be paying us to do it. It'd be like, you know, Ocean Breeze Park or something. It's not like that. I just want to share that. I know you know it, and I don't want to insult you, but acts of God and the intensity with which you have to work make it not something that people are rushing to do. And if they do rush to do it, they rushed as fast away from it as they did to get into it. We've known many people who've tried it and didn't last a year. Finally, I wanted to mention that homeowners and the public can come and speak just like me. You know, it's not that you have to be on the committee. Anybody can come and speak at the committee meetings, right, Chairman? So that we have a voice. And my experience with the VMRC has been that when somebody complains about something or protest or is not happy, they try to resolve it between the two parties first in an amicable situation. And then if it doesn't work, they go to the commission, and the commission gathers all the facts and listens to staff recommendations and makes a really good decision most of the time. And, you know, it's worked for a long time. And I think we need to recognize that this situation where they say there's conflict, which I don't agree there's conflict, I think there's potential for concern, would be a better way to put it, that homeowners can say to me as an oyster farmer, Bev, I think we need to relocate this, or we need to move this, or this is not a good practice, or I'd like it if you didn't do this on Sunday afternoon or something, and we could work it out because we're neighbors, or either go to the VMRC and have some sort of arbitration rather than make it more government regulation, which would put the oyster farmers out of business, which is not what we really want to do. We want to grow oysters. And finally, I think that it's important for me to say that I think the cages are quite lovely. I think the oysters are quite lovely. And I think that, you know, when people are calling me and saying, how can I come with you? I want to go out and see your farm. I want to see what you do. I want to see the oysters. I want to see your operation. That for some people who think, as earlier said, some people's trash is another man's treasure, that there are people who think that the farm, whether it be a liquid farm or a on the ground farm, is a good thing. So, and thank you for your time. Mr. Chairman, can I ask you if the public would be allowed to make a presentation at some point in the future, a slideshow to show some things to the committee?
Well, I'll address that to the group later.
Okay, thank you.
I have a question.
I want to ask, yes.
Do you know of a lot of ecotourism tours that are being conducted in the Lynn Haven by aquaculturists?
Absolutely. I know that, you know, the governor of Virginia has an oyster trail, and that we're part of that, and that we've been promoting through the Virginia Beach City tourism. People want to see, and my son can speak to that. I'll let him talk to it better because he's been doing it for a long time now, that we have people that have come from China and from Virginia Beach to see the farm and to learn about how we have changed the Lynn Haven for the better. And we always tell everyone that it is a tourism attraction. You know, it definitely is, because people come out and they actually, I know this is going to scare some folks, but they pay money to go out and see the farm and to experience, you know, everything that we do. And we actually let them participate in that. And even more important to me is that we have educational groups. We have young people come out and learn how they can be part of changing. I've often thought, you know, we really want to have local seafood. We really want to have green farms. We want to have people that are out there working and growing. I'm so saddened by all the people in my age category, 70 years old, that are learning that their children or their grandchildren don't want to be watermen. They want to get away from it because they're not respected, they're not treated with the kind of, I guess, consideration that in historically they were. They were considered to be, you know, the salt of the earth and good people and hardworking and all those kinds of things. And, you know, for us to not have that opportunity and to have our children say, I've had it, I'm walking away from this, I think it would be very scary, because we don't grow enough of our own seafood. We need to do it locally. We don't need. Did I answer your question?
Yes, you did. Thank you.
I'll add to that. I've had about five or six tours where the city tourism office calls, and they have food writers from the Northeast and New York City and all, and ask if we'll take them out and show them whatever. And we've done that at least five times, maybe more.
Pete, did you want to come back up here?
To address the issue with the gentleman from the city, I had to speak against two bills in the General Assembly last year on the same subject he was talking about. The bills are so poorly written and so confusing that nobody could really understand them. Ms. Husky was there the day, and we discussed these things for a couple weeks up there. The point that I made to the Senate committee was that we did not mind the idea of allowing the city to do navigation projects, but we just wanted to make sure that the landowner was properly compensated. It's just an eminent domain type thing. And the thing that brought it up was a family by the name of Collins that was trying to hold the city hostage on a dredging project way up there behind I guess Chesapeake and Colony up that way, and they didn't use that bottom, and they probably got compensated more than they should have for it and held the project up for a long time. We don't want that to happen. But some of this bottom we have, a lot of people paid a lot of money for it. Some of it is of no value, and we have to come up with some process for determining the value of the land and then letting it be purchased in the navigation project go on in an expeditious manner. To address your concerns and what I've heard here tonight and in other meetings, it seems like most of the concerns are onshore or very near shore cages. Am I correct?
Yes.
The process in the past has been to discourage, this is by the commission, to discourage the leasing of those inshore strips. That's why the inshore strips are there, because we were never able to lease them. And now, with everybody thinking that there's this great fortune in growing oysters, which Hap can attest to, that's not correct. You see a lot of people attempting and putting requests in for these leases. We would rather not see some of them even leased up. I don't want to work up under your house. I live on the water in Norfolk. I have the same concerns. Sometimes that's where the hardest bottom is. But if this hadn't been changed in the last few years, we might not even be going through all this. So that's one thing that you need to address, to see if the commission or staff will discourage even having the application taken. And that's the way it was done before. You go in the office and they say, I want this piece. And they go, no, well, we can't lease up against the shore, and you're only going to get this much, and don't even apply for it, and don't waste our time and waste your money. And that was the discussion. They have the obligation, though, to take the application. But just like Ben said, that does not mean they can deny it for any reason. If you come in there with a scowl on your face, they can deny it. Just make sure you keep that in mind. That's what this whole process is about. The thing is I agree with you 100%. And we would like to avoid all conflict that we can. But at the same time, you know, we do have a right to do what we're doing out there. I've been lobbying in the General Assembly for a little over 30 years. And we had a legislator from up the bay that later became Secretary of Natural Resources. His name was Taylor Murphy. I know Richard knows him well. When he retired from the General Assembly, he gave a speech to the Chesapeake and Tributaries Committee warning all the members and the public that was there and all the representatives to be careful about people. Now, this is from him. This is not me. Warning the folks that were going to make these decisions to be careful about folks that move to the water that have never lived there before. Now, this man's from up the bay, way up, Rappahannock River. He said, because these people move there, and they have the opinion when they move to the water that they have dominion over not just the land that they purchased, but everything in their view. And that's not the case. But it's not to say that they have no say at all in what goes on. I appreciate your opinion on having more notification. But the question is how far does that notification go? Does everybody in the zip code, like Mr. Rivera, can't remember his name, the police officer, everybody in the zip code get a notification? Or will it be folks in the particular area where the cages are going to go? Does somebody in Lincoln have a say in what would go on in the middle of the Lynn Haven River where there's no houses on either shore? How far is this notification going to go? These are the things you folks need to decide. And if these things are within reason, I don't think you'll get much care. I think you'll be able to get what you need. Okay?
Thank you. Pete? Welcome, Chris.
Good evening, Chris Lefford. Thank you for the opportunity. I'm going to try to keep it short tonight. Like last time, I'm going to try to stick with the facts. I thought the things I brought up about the commission and the composition of the commission addressed some of the comments that were made. Tonight, I want to address some comments that were made last time by Mr. Fetter. Before I do that, I want to say that when I put in the application that kind of spawned a lot of this, I took every chance to go and meet people in their backyard. My first priority in this is to make the river a better place. My second priority is to be a good neighbor. And I probably should say, no, let me back up. My first priority is to make things safe for myself and those around me. And my second priority is to make the river a better place and then to be a good neighbor. You know, I want to get along with folks. I told people what I was doing. I told them what I intended to do. I gave them, you know, my plan. And so I understand and I respect Mr. Fetter's concerns, and I extend and respect a lot of your concerns. But one point that's been brought up and continues to be brought up is this land value and the values going down. What I have right here, and you can look it up yourself or I can give you a copy, is a copy of the transaction of the highest real estate transaction, the largest sum paid for a vacant piece of land in Lynn Haven. And I want to tell you that not only was it near Mr. Fetter, but it was right next door to Mr. Fetter. I have the address right here. Mr. Fetter lives at 3376 Eagle's Nest. This piece, and this is all public. The piece of property with nothing but a shed on it, blank piece of property, is at 3372, sold for a record $1.2 million, the highest price ever paid for a piece of vacant land on Lynn Haven waterfront.
Per square foot.
So I really think, and I can, I'm probably going to do some more homework to find more and more of these. I don't see the prices in the Lynn Haven going down. I don't see them, and if they are, being related to oyster aquaculture. So I just wanted to bring that as one of the first things to dispel this whole, you know, idea that oyster aquaculture is causing land values and real estate values to go down. The other thing I want to do is bring together some facts. There was three incidents on June the 11th, but one that sticks out. Now, I interviewed the towboat that was involved, navigational incident with a yacht, new yacht to the Cavalier Country Club, one of the largest yachts ever docked in Lynn Haven, so much so that it may be even constrained by its draft in the existing navigational channels. And this was proven on Saturday. And I have this, and you can talk to the towboat people who work with it. Interviewing the captain, told the owner who was present on the boat he couldn't make it through a certain channel in Broad Bay. The owner said, "We'll do it anyway." The captain says, "We're going to bump bottom. We're going to run aground." And this is in the channel, okay? Owner said, "Let's try it. Let's do it anyway." Yacht ran aground. Towboat had to tow it. Yeah, this is the kind of thing, you know, that flies in the face of good responsibility and navigation. And these are the folks, and these are sometimes the situations that it's difficult to have fault with oyster cages and other, you know, things that are going on and even like the story of Mr. Chalmers. You know, constantly there are bad boaters. They're not everywhere. They're not the majority. I understand that. But the bottom line is that not everywhere is for boating. We talk about technologically changing. Technology's changing. 25 to 30 years ago, and I'm probably dating maybe 30 years ago, which is relatively recent when it comes to navigation, there were no jet skis. There were no jet-propelled craft. Now we have vessels that can go places that they've never been before. And now all of a sudden we're going to relinquish those areas and say, man, that's for boating now. That we're going to let everywhere that there's water be for boating. Now, how fair is that? I'm trying to figure that out. I'm trying to figure out how fair that is. So, you know, these are things I want the committee to think about moving forward as well. You know, the idea has been floated for, you know, the entire Lynn Haven to be no wake. I like the idea of that. I'm just going to close with that tonight. You know, there are a couple other things I'd like to touch on, but we can save those. Also wanted to mention that one particular lease that gets a lot of photographs, gets a lot of visual press, and is really been traipsed out on a number of occasions, and that's a certain lease off of Baycliff. I want to say that the homeowners adjacent to that have not complained, get along with those oystermen just fine. And if you have the pictures, I'll show them to you tonight where they are. The leaseholder's here. He gets along well with those homeowners. So the fact that we bring that one out is one of the poster children of this close to the land and close to docks and close to homeowner situations, and that it's not good, is not indicative of all the relationships, because in this particular case, the relationship is good. Appreciate your time. Thank you very much, and we'll see you on the 1st.
Thank you, Chris. All right, anybody else want to speak to us tonight? All right, come forward, please. Almost was out of here.
No cigar.
Yeah, I'll be doing that tonight. Starts in a half hour.
Thank you all for doing this. I know it takes a lot of time and it's a little bit of pressure. There's a lot of people who are watching us, watching y'all. I am. My wife is. And
could you please introduce yourself?
Yeah, speak
please.
To the microphone. I think a homeowner's.
No, introduce yourself.
Oh,
please.
I'm sorry. I apologize. I should have done that. I'm not used to doing this. I'm sorry.
All right. We'll remind you.
Yeah, George Kotaritis.
Thank you.
Okay. I guess you could say I'm a boater and a homeowner, probably. The notion of a no wake really disturbs me, so just thought I'd just mention that. Let's see. I have a couple questions. Is the commission up here, the committee here going to address free range activities? Is it just going to be cages? For instance, you know, laying down a reef and however you put the spat on the shell and create the grounds and do all that stuff, is that going to be addressed as well, or is it just going to be the aquaculture structures? So that would be one question. And that's whatever it is, I'm just curious.
That has been discussed. The main issues that have been the cages have been the main complaints. But we have discussed notification of leases for on-bottom aquaculture.
Okay.
Also.
All right. Okay. Secondly, I hesitate to come up here, honestly. That's why I'm very nervous. I'll be honest with you. I'm just very, very nervous right now. I'm choked up. I'm not this kind of a person. I actually do speak in front of people, and I'm fairly comfortable at it. But I feel like I'm being threatened. I feel like I'm being threatened everything from having a no-wake zone where it's going to take me 2 hours to get out to my fishing grounds. I feel like I'm threatened by having people up against my property harvesting oysters. Okay? And it's an insecure feeling. My wife is very upset about it. We spend every morning waking up pretty much talking about it. It's like a constant topic in our household. This is personal. I know y'all are dealing with a Lynn Haven River issue, and I'm all about that too. I want to help my neighbors, you know, solve their issues. So it's not just about my little problem. I don't want to get into any fights with anybody or, you know, verbal fights. And I'm a conciliatory person. I tend to be a consensus builder type person. But I do feel like my lifestyle and the thing I've worked for my whole life, like Mr. Federer was saying last time, is being threatened. And I hesitate to come up here because I don't want to give off the wrong impression. I'm very concerned because I have to appear before VMRC, it appears, to protest an application immediately behind my home that's causing us great distress. And I honestly don't want to give off the wrong impression. I'm just being straight up. I don't want people to think I'm a gadfly, you know. Everybody knows what a gadfly is. Anyway, that's one thing. I also do like the sanctuary reefs. I wrote even a little letter to the editor last year about that, and I think they've done a great thing. I support that whole process that's happening, what I understand it to be, and I know there's some controversy with all of that. There seems to be controversy with everything involving an oyster. So I guess there's going to be controversy with sanctuary reefs too. But I'm learning about them, and I certainly want to help support that whole process. I know that VMRC has an in-house policy, I think, 100-foot buffer, I think you had mentioned last time. It's like a policy. It's not a regulation. It's a policy, sort of, what you come up with. Maybe the committee up here could come up with some sort of recommendation for a buffer for sanctuary reefs, because we've heard Ms. Forget mentioned it, and a few other people have mentioned their concern about poaching. And I think 25 or 50 feet is kind of small. 100 feet, it may be fine. Maybe it needs to be 150. Maybe it needs to be 200 feet. I don't know. That's for y'all to figure out. But maybe something could be put in place so it doesn't have to be like a guessing game. Because all the reefs around the river, maybe one reef has a 100-foot buffer. Maybe another reef has a different buffer. It'd be nice to be able to have it all one way so everybody understands they're not supposed to be messing around with those oysters. I guess that's it. I'm sorry for being nervous, but it's how I feel. I feel nervous, and that's it.
Thank you.
Thank you for your comments.
All right. Anyone else? Yes. Come on.
My name is Clay Atkinson. I'm with Black Red Oyster Company. I just want to introduce myself real fast to the commission. I am the leaseholder that is directly off of Mr. Federer's property, in case you're wondering who that guy is. Our relationship with Mr. Federer, as our understanding was, up until we started reading about him in the paper, was pretty good. We have talked to him several times. He has our cell phone numbers. We communicate with him regularly. He has asked us to relocate our equipment. We did so. The other neighbor asked us to reload our equipment, so we went to them and said, hey, where did both of you guys want our equipment? They came to a decision, and we put it there. As far as interrupting any of his activities, he has our information. If he ever called us and said, hey, don't come out today, we wouldn't go. I just want to be clear. We have tried to establish as best we can. We will continue to do so, and that's all I have to say. Thank you.
Keep up the good work.
Thank you.
You're coming back?
George, come forward because it's on tape, please, sir.
Okay, so I need to come up?
It's being recorded, yes.
Just very quickly, what really hurts me personally, it's not just what's happening to us or what the stress we're under right now. It's what I see other people going through. And I know some people maybe wouldn't have problem with having cages or people working in the shallows behind their house. Some people may not have a problem with that. I would not be one of those people, neither would my wife or my family or my friends or relatives. What hurts me is when I see other people suffering to the point of tears. I see it happening. I know homeowners that are going through it. And Mr. Federer worked his whole life to have the house that he has. And he's legitimately upset. And he's thinking about moving. Now, to me, that's horrible that a man works his life, earns enough, saves enough, and is, a decent citizen, employs people, it sounds like. He has a company with a lot of people that work for him, and he has this home that he's dreamed of, and now he has to think about selling it. That should never happen in this world. Commercial, and I'm just going to make this general statement, and I hesitate to speak in front of everybody because I don't want to give off the wrong impression, but I just don't think that commercial, like you were saying, John, Mr. Aspinwall, commercial does not belong up against residential. That's why we have zoning. Commercial and recreational don't belong together. That's why we have zoning. In this case, what we're dealing with here, I don't know the resolution, but I know in the world that I grew up in, the world that I've known up until last August when I learned about this, that was the case. And I think that's the way it should be in this case, too.
Any others? Running out of people. All right, is that it? Okay. Then we will go home and watch the NBA playoffs, the finals.
Wait a minute, you're not going through the tunnel if we get home in time.
I will get home in time. We'll see y'all in Virginia Beach on the 1st of July in the morning.
He's going to email you.
I think polite is good in general.